Welcome to BridgeEd, the podcast brought to you by The Bridge here at Wellington College, where we'll be joined by a series of interesting guests to explore some of the most topical issues in the education sector.
Gianpaolo. Well, for me, it's morning. For you, it's later in the day. I'm very excited. I've been looking forward to this conversation. It's the first time that we will be talking live with one of the first authors from the Bridge Journal of Education Research and Theory. And I hope that, you know, this will be a series of conversations that we will continue in the future. So welcome. And tell us a little bit about yourself and where you are, where you're working, where you're living.
Thanks, Karen. It's great to speak to you again. So I'm Gianpaolo Dentico. I'm the head of science in Wellington College International Tianjin in China. So Tianjin's quite a big city next to Beijing. So it's about 30 minutes away from Beijing on the high speed rail here. And I've been at this school here for around 10 years. I came as a very inexperienced young teacher. And I did my PGCE and QTS here. And I've been head of department here for about 4 or 5 years now. Before I was in Wellington College, I worked in another bilingual school in Shanghai. And before that, I worked in a university in Wuhan. And I did that straight after finishing my master's degree in biology.
Well, super. Thank you. We are talking today because you did a very interesting bit of action research on the impact of TASME in science learning, Key Stage 3. Tell us a little bit about what motivated you to undertake that study.
So I first heard about TASME from another head of science that I know. And they told me that there was this amazing platform which used spaced repetition to help pupils learn science. And, after being in China for about 10 years, I've made a bit of an effort to try and pick up quite a lot of Chinese. And I used a lot of spaced repetition software myself to try and do that. There was one called Anki that I used a lot. And I definitely felt for me that helped me pick up a lot of vocabulary very, very quickly. So I was kind of fascinated to see how TASME could work with using some of these similar spaced repetition algorithms for our students here. And also alongside the core spaced repetition platform, TASME offered a lot of adaptive learning features. So if it picked up that pupils were not doing very well in a specific area, it would give targeted, individualized tasks to help them master the content and catch up. So I was really interested to see how exactly this platform could help our pupils here. As an international school, we have quite high turnover of pupils, and we have a lot of pupils with quite strong ELA needs. So I thought it could be a really, really strong solution to help us help students to consolidate the new content that they were learning and maybe even catch up with some of the gaps that they might have missed from the previous schools. I decided to have a look at some of the claims that were being made by TASME. And they seem very impressive. So TASME said that if pupils meet the recommended number of goals per week, which I think it was 4 daily goals per week, that if they did that, they would outperform national averages. And so I looked at where the research was coming from, and almost all of it was from TASME themselves. And there was, I think, one MSc thesis online, which also made some quite strong claims about TASME. Mm-hmm. And when I looked a little bit further, I thought a little bit further about some of the claims made, especially the one about if the pupils meet the, you know, quite strict criteria for progress in TASAMI of these four daily goals a week, that they would outperform the national average. And I was wondering if that association might have been caused by something else rather than the TASAMI platform itself. Specifically, a pupil that's going to meet those four daily goals a week is going to be quite a conscientious pupil. So I was wondering if really the difference was caused by the level of conscientiousness of the pupil rather than the TASAMI platform itself. So I decided I was going to try and set up a study myself to see if we could shed a little bit of light on that question.
You've already raised a number of really interesting points and challenges in undertaking research. And, you know, I applaud you for really looking into the origin of the studies that claimed such positive results, because we don't always think about doing that. And the sources, the legitimacy of the sources or the rigor of the studies that are mentioned is really important. And then also, you know, you start to raise questions about, well, how are we going to verify, and what are the other factors that may come into play? And that's where things tend to get a little bit messy. So can you tell us more about the process of the study itself and perhaps what some of the challenges were, but also where you have those glimmers of light and understanding about the real use or practicality of this platform?
So the study was a very simple study, and it fit around what we were doing on a day-to-day basis in school anyway. So we're quite a small school. We have two classes in each year group at Key Stage 3, and both classes are mixed attainment. And they're the students are selected for each class randomly. So I figured that was a good baseline. And I figured that perhaps we could give one of those classes in each year group, which in year 8 and year 9 were also taught by the same teacher. So we could control for the effect of the teacher as well. Mm-hmm. In year 7, we had different teachers. But I figured we could give one of those classes access to TASAMI and not give the access to the other class. And we would try to encourage the class that had the access to meet the four daily goals a week as recommended by TASAMI. So we ran the study for a whole year. And then I had to think about what was the metric we were going to use in order to measure progress, which isn't the easiest thing to decide upon, because we also need to control for, I suppose, subjectivity of the marker and assessments. So in the end, I decided to keep things simple, that we wouldn't use any teacher marked assessments, and that we would use external PTS assessments. So that's progress through science, which is offered by GL Assessment, which is the same company that do CAT4s, which I know a lot of schools use.
Yeah. So what came out at the end?
So the results of the study, we traced it for a year, and we measured the PTS at the start of the year, and we measured the PTS at the end of the year. And the progress is essentially the difference between the PTS score at the start and the PTS at the end of the year. And we used a t-test to see if these differences were statistically significant. But before I get onto the statistical significance, perhaps I could just talk about the means, because a few surprises there. Even by looking at the means, we saw that in year 7 and year 8, the class that used TASAMI actually made less progress than the class that didn't use TASAMI. But it wasn't statistically significant. And in year 9, the class that did use TASAMI did make slightly more progress. And that also wasn't statistically significant. So it was a surprise, because from everything I'd seen from the claims made by TASAMI the recommendations I'd had from other people that I really respect, and what I'd read about the platform online from lots of other sources, I was really expecting it to have a really strong impact, and that just wasn't the case.
Well, why do you think that is? I mean, I'm sort of wondering things as you're speaking. Those people who said, now outside of the TASMI studies, those people who said, you know, it's really very effective, or students who said that they really felt it worked for them. Is it a question of perception rather than something that can be concretely evaluated, or something else?
You know, that gap between perception of learning, especially from our students, and real measurable learning is something that I found really interesting coming from this study. Because we also did survey the pupils, and I think something like 75% of our pupils said that they enjoyed the platform and they'd recommend it to other pupils. And they thought, at least, that it was helping them to learn. But in reality, we couldn't measure that learning using the PTS tool.
Can I come back just for a second to the, the recommended 4 times daily or 4 times a week daily, I didn't quite get the precise nature of it, but those requirements, is there something there that is important in understanding the effectiveness? In other words, if you only do it 3 times, you're not going to make the progress, or is that a rabbit hole?
So TASMI themselves have the claims based upon people meeting these specific number of weekly goals. But what we wanted to test is, are these effects measurable in a real school? Because they've got quite large sizes of cohorts that they can do their analysis on. And they've essentially, I suppose, taken the pupils that do meet these very strict requirements and compared that against national averages. What we did is we compared 2 real classes. One of them had access to the platform and one of them that didn't have access to the platform. So at the time, at least, I've not looked into TASMI since we did the study, but at the time, at least, the tasks that pupils were given were kind of recall-based questions based upon multiple choice. So when I'm thinking about perhaps why a pupil's success in being able to answer these multiple choice questions didn't translate into progress in real scientific understanding. And I think it's just due to, I suppose, the success that they were having was very context dependent on remembering the answers to those specific questions rather than generalizing into real knowledge.
Can you talk a little bit about why you refer to a real school context? I mean, understand in terms of, sample size for studies, but are there some other elements that seem key to you in terms of understanding the study that you undertook in the specific context of your student population and school?
Yeah, so schools are very messy places. And of course, there's lots of different factors that influence the learning of pupils. And I think that if we are going to invest in an educational platform, the progress that pupils are making from using that platform, I think that it should be measurable across the cohort, not just for specific pupils who are very conscientious and meet the recommendations. And that's not what we found with the study here.
There's another interesting question to ask about parent communication when we undertake studies in schools. So you had one class that had access to TASMI and another class that didn't. How did you communicate that to parents in a way that it didn't raise any concerns on their part, or did you not have to do that?
So that was a concern that we originally had in designing the study. And we informed the parents of the test group that they were getting access to the tool, and we didn't inform the parents of the control group about the study. And we didn't really have any problems going forward from that. We were concerned that, you know, the parents from the control group would feel like the children were being disadvantaged to not have access to this amazing ed tech tool. But in reality, our parents didn't raise any concerns about that. So we were quite supported by the parents in performing this study.
Well, then congratulations. It sounds like you have a good relationship with your parent body, and they trust you as professionals who know what you're doing. So that's a good thing. Is there anything about this process that you'd want to share with others undertaking some similar kind of work about challenges or about and or what you feel this study has brought you as a practitioner?
Okay. So perhaps first I'll talk about a couple of the limitations of the study that we did. And of course, the main limitation was that not all of our pupils did comply to that 4 daily goals a week recommendation. And we didn't go and do the analysis to see if the pupils that did made more progress than the pupils that didn't, because we didn't want to bias the data set in the same way that TASMI had done. So I think we can conclude there that it wasn't measurable within our specific cohort, but that's not to say that the tool couldn't have had results in other schools and in other contexts. In terms of other challenges that I faced in setting up the study, I don't want to sound like I'm very anti-educational technology and anti, because I'm not. And I still feel like there is a lot of potential in a lot of different platforms. And there's so many coming out at the moment. But I suppose we really need to know if we're going to invest in them, if they work or not. And in actually designing this study, because I've never done anything like this before, I did use a lot of AI to help me design the study. So I started off by having a conversation with ChatGPT, essentially. And I was telling the ChatGPT, I'm thinking about doing a study on this platform called TASMI. What do you think about this idea of having a control group that doesn't have access and a test group that does have access? And maybe I could use a t-test to see if there's a statistically significant difference between the two groups. And going back and forth with the AI tool really helped me to tighten up the initial study design. And then later on, after I'd submitted my first draft to you, I got some really, really good feedback. And that feedback was about, why did I use t-test? Why didn't I have a look at effect sizes? So I went back to ChatGPT because I had to understand what were effect sizes and how could I calculate them? How could I interpret them? So a few videos and a few conversations with ChatGPT, and I became a little bit more confident with that. So I'd recommend anybody who hasn't done anything like this before to kind of just dive into it and leverage those tools, leverage the AI tools and the technology that we've got to try and help learn about it. So it was kind of a collaboration between me, the AI tools, and the reviewers. And in the end, I think we found out something quite interesting.
I think so too. And I really like the idea of what's maybe becoming a necessity is to rethink what we mean by collaboration, because there was technical collaboration or AI collaboration and human collaboration, you with the tool and also with those people who were involved in reviewing and giving feedback. And that's all really interesting and kind of exciting. And I think there's also some really good advice in what you're describing, because sometimes we have teachers who are saying, oh, I would like to engage in some kind of research, but they're really hesitant. Sometimes they are much more better equipped to begin it than they realize. But you've taken away some of the mystery and you've reassured people that, in fact, for one thing, there is support and it's not insurmountable to understand some of this terminology that maybe, you know, we haven't thought about since we did PGCE or, you know, a BA or MA in education. So thank you for encouraging others. What comes next?
So just on what you were saying, the review process was really useful as well, because the first draft that I had, I think originally I had a bit more of a mixed methods approach to the question, and the reviewer recommended that I focus more on the more quantitative side, which on receiving the reviewer's feedback, I realized that it was a lot stronger. But I still wanted to use a little bit of the surveys that we'd had done in order to help contextualize the quantitative side of the study, which I think was very useful and helped to understand a little bit more about that gap between the pupil's perception of learning and actual measurable learning. So you asked what was next?
Mm-hmm.
So as I've said, I'm not, I don't want to sound like I'm very anti-EdTech, because I'm not, because I've used ChatGPT and AI myself in helping me to design this study, in helping me to be able to understand something and apply something which I had not used before in terms of the statistical analysis and the study design. So we were very interested in testing the effects of AI tutors on pupils. Mm-hmm. So perhaps we could have some kind of similar setup to how we used in the TASMI study, where we have two groups, one that has access to the AI tutor tool and one that doesn't. The problem with this is that everybody has access to AI tutor tools now, yeah, regardless if it's a specific one that we provide for them that has been tailored towards science education, or whether it's a general one like a ChatGPT or DeepSeek here in China. So I think that one would be a little bit more difficult to do as a controlled quantitative study, and maybe an action research approach might be more interesting there. But also, I think what I learned as well from the TASMI study is that maybe I'm a little bit less interested in if a tool can help pupils to answer multiple choice questions like TASMI did. And I'm a little bit more interested in what pupils are thinking and how they are thinking about their learning. So one other thing I've been starting to become a little bit more interested in is using a translanguaging approach. And I think for the same reasons really that we were interested in TASMI, that we thought that it could help a lot of our ELA learners or pupils who had missed core content before, I think that this approach could also be useful in helping our pupils leverage their first language in developing their scientific knowledge, because a lot of the time in our context, the scientific knowledge might actually be better than we would be able to observe through the medium of the second language.
Well, I think you know that I have a real fascination with teaching to multilingual learners and the importance of translanguaging. And there is a lot of very good research indicating that using the student's L1 will bring both linguistic and academic benefits to the students. And then there's also, you know, the ethical component and how is it that we value the language and culture of all students in our classrooms. But that's now we're going off in a completely different direction. And actually, I hope, I mean, we'll have to close in a minute or two, but I hope that as you continue studying these areas, that you will think of the journal and of perhaps sharing more of your work with us. Is there anything I didn't ask you that you would like to say before we close?
I think we've covered the study quite well and some perhaps future ideas that I've got. And I did know that you'd done a lot of work with translanguaging. So it could be very interesting to pick your brains at some point in the future about a potential study design that we're thinking about.
Well, that would be with great pleasure on my part. So thank you, Gianpaolo. And thank you for being the first of our conversations with journal authors. And for anybody who's listening, I do hope that you will look at what we're doing at the Bridge at Wellington College, at our research projects, our journal. And we hope to create a really vibrant community of educators who wish to exchange on whatever's on their minds. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen. Lovely to speak to you.
Please leave a comment, ask a question, and like, follow, and subscribe to hear more from Bridge Ed. You can also follow The Bridge on LinkedIn, and you can find out more information on our website at thebridge.wellingtoncollege.org.uk. Until next time.